Closing arguments have started in the case for Lori Vallow. Victims in the Idaho stabbing are getting their honorary degrees. An update on the Utah mom. It's always about the money. A wrongfully convicted man is released after 29 years in prison. Jordan Vandersloot is coming to America. And we have a story where these two just need to be prosecuted. What they did was gross. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for joining us. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't. Like if you do. Leave me a comment. Hit that little bell for notifications. And remember, you can listen to us anytime on any of your favorite podcasting apps. Now, let's get right to it. You got to support the people that support Crime Talk. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Sign up for that background subscription service today. You're going to be happy you did. Heck, it could possibly save your life. You would not believe how many people have sent us messages saying over the years, Scott, I was going to get involved with somebody. Turned out they had crimes against children on their record. Yeah, you got to check them out. It's dating malpractice not to do so. So when you sign up for that background subscription service, you can do a background search on one person or 100 people. It doesn't matter. And remember, you can cancel any time. But you're going to get a report, and it's going to be emailed to you. It's going to be prepared while you wait, and it's going to have information as to one's criminal history. Do they have convictions? Are they telling you the truth about what they own? Do they have judgments against them? Things that, let's face it, they're probably not going to volunteer to you until they get to know you a little better, if they decide to tell you at all. Go to crimetalksearch.com. I'm telling you, you'll be happy that you did. All right, let's go ahead and open the record for May 11th, 2023. First on the docket, yes, that's right. Finally, after years of waiting, the closing arguments have begun in the case of Lori Vallow. Now, the prosecuting attorney, Rob Wood, was doing the first closing for the government. As you may recall, the government always gets two closings because the burden is on them to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. Prosecuting attorney Lindsay Blake gave the opening statement when the case started almost a month ago. And their theme of money, power, and sex, well, that's being brought back to the closing arguments. They state that beginning back in 2018, Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell set all of their evil plans in motion. Along the way, they included her brother Alex Cox in a conspiracy. Remember, they are charged with a conspiracy to commit murder of J.J. Tiley and Tammy Daybell. They're not saying she did it. They're saying they conspired and Alex Cox did it. That's where the defense is going to have to make their argument to say, hey, Alex Cox must have acted alone. Otherwise, she's going to be convicted. Now, on our Patreon show last night, we talked about the typical prosecution opening. These are the facts. This is the law. Now, we're going to have to wait until we upload the audio recording tonight since they don't give it to us live. I can almost hear the monotone speak coming from the courtroom here today. Hopefully, there's a little bit of passion on both sides. Let's hope so. Anyway, the prosecutors continued that the plan was driven by Lori Vallow's desire for and use of money, power, and sex. And this plan must end today with verdicts of guilty. That's what he's asking for. Then the prosecutor put up a photo of Tylee Ryan up on the screen. As I talked about last night, it's going to be PowerPoint. She was burned and buried in Chad Daybell's backyard. What was left of her body they dumped in a green bucket and buried in a pet cemetery on top of a piece of her skull. Tylee was gone and buried and out of the way, but Lori Vallow kept collecting Tylee's money. Lori never reported that Tylee was missing. She lied to multiple people. She had to keep her body hidden to keep her to keep getting the money. Then we see a photo of J.J. Vallow on the screen. J.J.'s voice was silenced forever by a strip of duct tape placed across his mouth. A white plastic bag was placed over his head, secured tightly with duct tape wrapped around from his forehead to his neck. The evidence says he struggled, and he'll never know how long he fought before they wrapped the tape around his wrists and ankles. He stopped breathing, his heart stopped breathing, and he died. It was brutal. It was horrific. for a 7-year-old boy with special needs. The prosecutor continued, just like Tylee, Lori never reported that JJ was missing or dead. She kept collecting the money. She lied to multiple people and even asked a friend to lie to the police about JJ's location. Just like Tylee, after JJ was murdered, she kept collecting the money. The prosecutor then puts up a photo of Tammy Daybell up on the screen. A loving mother of five, a school librarian, was murdered in her own home. She was asphyxiated in her own home. The evidence is clear that Lori, Chad, and Alex conspired to murder Tammy. Acting together, they caused her death. Her death occurred just a little over a week after a masked gunman attempted to shoot her, and she entered her home after a night of church activity. Lori was conveniently gone for both the attempted murder and the successful murder. Those trips were not coincidences, and just like Tylee and JJ, there was money to be gained. Tammy's death, that's right, worth $430,000 in life insurance, and Lori wasted no time to benefit from that money. Then the prosecutor puts up wedding photos of Chad and Lori on the beach. They were freed from the obstacles of their kids and their wife. They were dancing on the beach. You have seen plenty of evidence of the affair that took place after they met. Wood is now. The prosecutor then walks through a timeline and says that tells the truth as it's displayed on the screen. The timeline, what he's referring to. Lori Vall is the one who ties this all together. He talks about the attempted shooting of Brandon B., Rexburg Police Department getting a call looking for JJ, the investigation into the missing kids, Tammy's body being exhumed, the kids being found. When it comes to conspiracy, you need to ask yourself, who murdered these people? Did Lori intend for it to happen? And was one of these overt acts accomplished in furtherance of the conspiracy? You only need to find one overt act in furtherance of the conspiracy, the prosecutor reminded the jury. And he argues that the state had met their burden for each overt act, and you only need to find one. To be clear, nobody here has been charged for their religious beliefs. They have been charged for using those religious beliefs to justify murder. Now, Prosecutor Woods then went through a list of the overt acts he says that Lori used to further the conspiracy and the grand theft. She never reported her kids missing. She changed her bank accounts to get the Social Security benefits from her kids. Burner phones, etc. All the steps that were taken in furtherance of the conspiracy. Prosecutor Woods then mentions the text messages about Tammy being in limbo and being possessed by a zombie. Woods then explains how Alex visited gun ranges, went to Sportsman's Warehouse, and then was located at a church near Chad's house on the night that Tammy died. These are all overt acts and steps taken to get to the murder. Then a slide has popped up from the prosecutor. It says money, the benefits of murder, power. Another slide is put up. It does not matter what they believed. It matters what they did. They can believe whatever they want. But when they use that to justify homicide, then things change. They use religion as a tool to manipulate others. Lori manipulated Alex Cox through religion. She manipulated Chad through emotion and sexual control. And they manipulated their friends. Get the money and they commit the murder. He says that she made sure to make arrangements to get money before JJ's death as well. Woods explains the amount you need to find for grand theft is $1,000. And if you find Lori Vall collected $1,000, that was not intended for her. You must find her guilty of grand theft. The prosecutor then highlights the text messages grooming Alex Cox. Lori Vall is telling Alex what to do. You never see Alex tell her what to do. She's always telling him what to do. Then Woods reference one message that says, "My lips are sealed." And Lori responds, "Good boy." Alex's wife, Zulima, testified that Alex believed all of it. The prosecutor wanted to stress that religion only matters because it's the tool they used to manipulate others. Who's in the common thread here? Lori. A slide then says sex, the affair. Text messages are displayed on the screen, apparently in the courtroom, about kissing for hours, being cheek to cheek. Lori using sex to manipulate Chad, and Chad seeks confirmation from Lori repeatedly. Sex, obstacles to their future together. The prosecutor points out that when Chad spoke about Tylee and JJ being close to death, remember their numbers, right? Lori responded with, "That is sweet. I miss you desperately. He argues that there is no doubt she wants these children gone. She encouraged their murder. She wants these children gone. He stressed that. They're not done. The defense is going to get to do their closing argument. We will have the audio from that up tonight. Like I said, I hope both sides have some passion for both of their, the state has passion and the defense has passion. We love good lawyering. Lori Vallow's got some serious problems. We'll still give her that presumption of innocence, but I think she needs to plan on spending the rest of her life in prison. We'll see what a jury will do. Next on the docket, University of Idaho students. Remember the four University of Idaho students stabbed to death in their off-campus home, allegedly by Brian Koberger. They will all be awarded posthumous degrees and certificates. Ethan Chapin, Zaina Kronodal, Madison Mogan, and Kaylee Gonsalves will be honored on May 13th at the university's graduation ceremony. Mogan and Gonsalves were a few months away from receiving their degrees when they were brutally stabbed to death in the early morning hours of November 13th, along with Chapin and Kronodal. Both Mogan and Gonsalves, seniors, will receive a general studies and marketing degree. Kronodal, who is a junior, will be issued a marketing certificate. And Chapin, who is a freshman, will be granted a recreation, sports, and tourism management certificate. It's too bad they never got to get the real thing. Tragedy there. Remember, Brian Koberger's preliminary hearing is June 25th. We'll see if Idaho maybe takes some lessons and just lets everybody see what's going on in the courtroom. Doesn't look like it. Everything wants to be done in secret. What is it with Idaho? I just don't get it. Next, an update on that Utah mom. Remember, I always say it's always about the money. And when they say it's not about the money, then you know it's about the money. So just say it's about the money. Well, the Utah woman who penned the book about grief after allegedly murdering her husband had fought with him about buying a multi-million dollar home, which she closed on just days after he died. Now, this comes from some search warrants that have been revealed in the case. Now, Corey Richens was apparently quite determined on buying a 22,000 square foot unfinished home in Heber City, but her husband refused to pay $2 million for the house. Now, Corey Richens claims they were celebrating buying the home in March of last year when her husband died from a massive overdose of fentanyl and their three kids were asleep upstairs. However, the dead man's family told investigators that he planned to tell the wife that they were not going to buy the mansion. On that same day, she was also told she was being cut out of Eric's will, according to the arrest affidavit. Now, Corey Richens closed her $2 million deal to buy the house on March 5th, the day after her husband died. Coincidences. It's amazing how those coincidences just pop up like that. That day, Eric Richens' sister also went to the couple's current home in Camas, just outside of Park City, and began threatening and verbally accosting Corey, according to a complaint in a civil matter. Now, after Corey insisted that the sister leave, the sister asserted that Corey did not own the family home and that she would ensure Corey was kicked out of the family house. Her attorneys allege that in a document as well, a civil matter. Now, the unfinished mansion that was bought, which also had a 3,000 square foot guest house, was apparently quite contentious with locals who deemed it an eyesore and called it to be torn down. Now, the budding author bought it from a young widow who ditched plans to move there after her own husband died after buying it for $2 million. Corey put it back on the market just 2 weeks later, trying to more than double her money by flipping it and asking $5 million. It is currently under contract for $3.75 million. Now remember, prosecutors allege that she served her husband a Moscow mule laced with roughly five times the lethal dose of fentanyl. She claims she's gone to sleep in one of the kids' rooms and woke up to find her husband dead. Well, police later found Richens' alleged connection to an accused drug dealer who admitted selling her fentanyl pills. The accused killer allegedly went back for stronger pills, asking for some of that Michael Jackson stuff, according to the police affidavit. Now, just be clear, it wasn't fentanyl. I think it was propofol that Michael Jackson had, but you know what I'm saying. She was asking for the good stuff to make sure somebody really, really became sleepy and didn't come back. Obviously, we'll give her the presumption of innocence. It's always about the money, ladies and gentlemen. It's always about the money. Next on the docket, A man convicted wrongfully is finally released. That's right. A Louisiana man was wrongfully convicted of sexually assaulting his six-year-old stepdaughter back in 1994. Well, he's now free after both he and the victim long claimed he didn't commit the crime. Patrick Brown was convicted based on the testimony of adults claiming what they believed the victim had said. This was according to the district attorney, a guy by the name of Jason Williams. Now, Brown was released by District Court Judge Calvin Johnson on Monday after 29 years in maximum security in a Louisiana state penitentiary. I'm sure that was just like staying at the Ritz-Carlton, wasn't it? No, I don't think so. Anyway, the victim spoke in court as Johnson signed the order releasing her stepfather, who she ultimately embraced afterwards. She said she had written over 100 letters arguing her stepfather's innocence and claiming another family member had actually molested her and even bragged about doing it at the time. Now, the biggest problem that the man has dealt with is modern technology. That's right. The world literally stops when people go to prison. And everything has changed. Computers, cell phones, none of that stuff existed in 1994. Well, you know, computers did. Cell phones didn't. Electric cars, all that stuff, brand new. It just shows you, ladies and gentlemen, yes, people do terrible things to children. Not going to deny that. But you always have to look and see, is there a parent or somebody else influencing or saying? That's why child hearsay laws are so wrong. So wrong. I get it. It's kids. But you don't want to be responsible for sending somebody to prison for 29 years for a crime they didn't commit. Jordan Vandersloot is coming to America. I just want to play that song, Coming to America Today, right? Well, a convicted killer now. He's imprisoned in Peru. Well, he'll be handed over to U.S. authorities to face extortion and fraud charges stemming from the unsolved 2005 disappearance and presumed murder of the Alabama teenager. Now, the executive order from Peru's Council of Ministers allowing the temporary extradition of Dutch citizen Jordan Vandersloot marked the latest twist in the nearly 20-year-old mystery surrounding Natalie Holloway. She was 18 years old from Birmingham, Alabama, and she vanished during a high school graduation trip to the Caribbean island of Aruba back in 2005. Her disappearance prompted an exhaustive investigation, a lot of media attention at the time, with authorities ultimately determining that she was last seen with Vandersloot and another man. Now, Vandersloot, a Dutch national from Aruba, was arrested in the Holloway disappearance but never charged with her alleged abduction. The teen remains have never been found, but an Alabama judge declared her legally deceased back in January of 2012. In 2012, Vandersloot was arrested in Peru for the 2010 murder of a 21-year-old Stephanie Flores, who was killed 5 years to the day after Holloway's disappearance. Now, prosecutors accused Vandersloot of killing Flores, a business student from a prominent family, to rob her after learning she had won money at the casino where the two had met earlier. They say he killed her with ferocity and cruelty, beating and then strangling her in the hotel room. He ultimately confessed to the Flores murder and was sentenced to 28 years in prison for that murder. He made headlines again in 2014 when his lawyers reported that Vandersloot had been stabbed in prison, but they ultimately determined, prison staff determined, that he had actually stabbed himself. Now, a statement from the Peruvian embassy announced the executive order clearing the way for Vandersloot to be extradited to the United States. But his extradition stems from not murder charges pertaining to Natalie Holloway, but it's prosecutors want to charge him or prosecute him for an attempt to profit from his connection to her disappearance. A grand jury in Alabama back in 2010 indicted Vandersloot on wire fraud and extortion charges, accusing him of trying to extort hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Holloway family. Prosecutors allege Vandersloot accepted $25,000 in cash from Holloway's family in exchange for a promise to lead them to her body in early 2010. Coincidentally, just before he went to Peru. I guess he needed some money. The FBI alleged that Vandersloot reached out to Holloway's mother and wanted to be paid the $25,000 to disclose her location and then another $225,000 ultimately to be paid as well. Now, during a recorded operation, Vandersloot pointed to a house where he said Holloway was buried, but in later emails admitted to lying about the location, according to the affidavits. Peru's Minister of Justice said in a statement that the government decided to accept the request from the United States authorities for the temporary transfer of Vandersloot to be prosecuted on the extortion charges, and in Peru, all extraditions must be approved directly from the president. There's been no mention of whether Vandersloot will face any charges stemming from the teen's death itself, as there was no immediate word from any U.S. officials. Seems somewhat unlikely, and it would be probably prosecuted in Aruba. Next on the docket. Are you serious? Did their parents ever teach them any manners? That's right. Take a look at these two knuckleheads. Licking ice cream in the grocery store and putting it back in a grocery store freezer? That's just gross. And now the police are investigating this clip that these two posted on their social media. Now, the Portsmouth Police Department is stating that they've received a lot of calls of people that are upset that these two have not been prosecuted. Now, Tequan, T-E-Q-U-A-N Hines, and his girlfriend, Asia, are seen in their own video grabbing a quart of Blue Bunny ice cream and licking it. The police say the cops are currently investigating the video to figure out which store the incident might have occurred at, adding, thus far, no business has come forward as a victim in their particular jurisdiction. However, Hines and Asia live in the Portsmouth area, according to their social media profiles. Now, they first posted this and then deleted by Kwan, first posted and then deleted once this blew up on social media, with many calling for the pair to be arrested and charged for the disgusting act. I would agree. It's just gross. Now, back in 2020, some other knucklehead, DeAdrian LeQuinn Anderson, did the same thing and was ultimately charged with criminal mischief by licking some Bluebell ice cream in that particular case, and he got 30 days in jail. I think these people should get at least 30 days just for being stupid, and they're not even a dumb criminal of the day. But let's meet our dumb criminal of the day. Please meet John Vanno. Yeah, that's right. He got into a little spat with a coworker about 8:15 on a Saturday night. And according to the criminal complaint, Mr. Vallow became upset, struck his colleague in the back of the head with a peel, which is some sort of cooking item which is used to move pies, pizza pies, in and out of the oven. After the victim fell to the floor, Vanno then followed him to the floor, punched him in the face, according to the police affidavit. The victim was taken to the hospital where he was treated for substantial pain and a cut on his lip. Vanno turned himself in to the Nassau County police and was charged with assault and criminal possession of a weapon. Now, Mr. Vanno, I get it. You've got employees, you've got coworkers you're frustrated with. Violence is never the answer, okay? Identification doesn't become an issue at that point. No real issue. Attacked with what could be a deadly weapon. Really? Was it really, really worth it? You probably got fired. Now you got to hire an attorney. I mean, what did the guy do that was that bad? You should have just quit. If you don't like your job, go find a new one. Don't assault the fellow coworkers. Mr. Vanno, you are a dumb criminal of the day. Congratulations. All right. Make sure you watch out for Frank putting up the closing arguments this afternoon. As soon as we get them up, hopefully it'll be something worth listening to. I hope it's not the monotone voice that I anticipate in my head going on and on and on for hours by both sides. Hopefully a little bit of passion. All right, we'll see you next time. Thanks for watching.